All right, we are live and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Train podcast series. I am your host, Joseph Ward. My homie, Patrick Irvin, my co-host, couldn't make it today. But as you know, Pat always hold it down on the back end. He's our technical person. He know all the little computer stuff that I don't know. So we always give him his good excuse for not being able to make these interviews. But, you know, I'm front end, he more back end. But shout out to Patrick. The Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. And PAX Inc. is a Black development organization aimed at developing the Black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the choice of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.paxinc.org. I got the Freedom Train all on my mind. So PACTSINC.org. Now, PAX Inc. is enrolled in something special called the Amazon Smile Program. So if you're not familiar with it, Amazon Smile is a program that helps nonprofits actually get donations. So you really wouldn't have to do anything different than what you would normally do on Amazon. Go buy the products that you would normally buy, but sign up with the Amazon Smile Program. And through that program, every time you make a purchase, a portion of the proceeds will go to any organization, any nonprofit organization that you choose. Just make PAX Inc. one of the organizations that you choose. So that's on the website. Also, make sure when you go to the website, you check out the codes of conduct, how you can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved. And remember to hover your mouse over that learning center. You get a drop down box with a lot of great information for you. One more time, that's PACTSINC.org. Make sure you visit our Freedom Train website. As you can see, it's scrolling across the bottom of the screen, www.freedomtrainradio.com, your home for the greatest podcasting you've ever heard in your entire life. We have at least 6 podcasts running on the network between myself, Patrick Irvin, Enigma September, Queen Candace, and Queen Shelby. So shout out to the team. And we got some incredible things coming up. So y'all make sure y'all stay tuned. All right. This is an interview I wanted to make happen for a minute ever since I saw this young man. So I'm scrolling through YouTube. I've heard the voice. I heard the name before. Heard the name Royce Lovett. I missed about 2 or 3 at-home concerts. And I was like, things that I was trying to catch on to see him perform, but I ended up missing them. But I'm at work and I'm scrolling through YouTube and I come across a TED Talk. And so when I'm watching the TED Talk, I'm listening to this young man tell a message to the people through song. Now, mind you, most of the TED Talks I've ever seen, there have been people just basically standing around speaking. So his and another gentleman's, I can't remember the other gentleman's name, were the ones that stood out to me. But when I tell you one of the best TED Talks I've ever seen in my life, seriously, I watch a lot of TED Talks. I watch a lot of information, and the way he gave the information, his performance, his presence, everything about him, the lyricism, I was like, all right, well, this young man has the gift. He has a special gift. And so I've been wanting to connect with him for a while. He's a lyricist, what I appreciate. He's a lyricist, he's a songwriter, he's a singer, he's a performer, he's an activist, he speaks out for those less fortunate. And he represents that soul of hip hop, that soul of music that gets down, that understands that music touches people, music inspires people, music speaks to people on multiple levels. So with that being said, I want to introduce this young man. He's doing excellent things in life and just professionally. So Mr. Royce Lovett, how you doing, my brother?
Man, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man.
Man, you've been out here doing your thing, man. Like I said, I've been wanting to connect with you for a minute. So I'm glad we could actually make this happen.
Yeah, me too. Me too, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, man, let's learn a little more about yourself. So, who is Royce Lovett? Like, give us some background information about yourself and what made you choose the path of music? Because a lot of people, we're from Tallahassee, so a lot of people choose the 9-to-5 route. But what made you actually pursue your musical career?
Well, I guess to give a quick backstory, because I can talk. I can talk.
It's all good.
Cut me off too. But what they say, pull my coattail if you need to. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida, raised down some dirt roads with some hardworking people. A lot of them are street evangelists. A lot of them are a lot of other things across the spectrum. I won't even name off some stuff, but I come from a very big family. And just to paint a picture for some who don't know Tallahassee, you know, there's two parts of Tallahassee. There's like the sticks, and it gets more sticky the further you go.
Yeah.
And then there's the city area, and then it gets a little bit more sticky. But within those areas, there's two parts.
Yeah.
You can recognize really quickly. There's poverty or lack, and then there's what, you know, as a child, I always thought was, you know, the folks who had it all or whatever. And so I kind of come from, at the same time, Tallahassee seems diverse because of our colleges.
Right.
But it's not a very diverse city.
Right.
So kind of putting all that together, I think that kind of made Royce Lovett. I think that kind of made me a hardworking dude who is very churched or grew up very churched. And because, you know, growing up in school for many years, you know, it was maybe I was the only black kid with a fade in my class.
Right.
So I think, you know, you kind of learn how to develop, you know, in that environment, if you know, one way to put it. As far as music, I think that was kind of, to be honest with you, like, I don't really like this answer. The first part of this answer I don't really like. It was either sports or music for me in my head, because, you know, it seemed that folks that had it, that looked like me, was doing sports or music.
Right.
You know, I never had a black male teacher my whole career of schooling.
Right.
And I just, you know, I wanted something else. I wanted something more. And so that's probably why it was so enticing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so those creative parts of me flew. When I think about like why I actually dove into it, probably because it was also an outlet for me at church.
Right.
You know, I was at church all the time. So it was like, might as well play the drum, might as well play guitar, might as well sing. And I didn't start taking it serious until I had this coming of age encounter where I realized that purpose must be real. And if purpose is real and we're all here for a reason, then my thoughts led me to believe that there is a creator. And if there's a creator, then the world is a lot bigger than I thought it was.
Right.
And so I was praying and I was just like, hey, what should I do with the rest of my life? And I believe I heard from God that I should just do music. No plan B's, no plan C's, just, you know, music all the way. So up until then, I had a lot of ideas, but then I just grabbed onto this music thing. And I think everybody has a coming of age moment at some point in life. I'm appreciative that it happened around the age of like 12, 13.
Okay.
Because I think that made me, because I wanted to be a really good writer, it made me stop talking so much. It
right.
made me want to look and watch and observe. And I think that kind of helped me navigate to not be where some of my friends are at the or family members are right now.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that you ain't got to touch the stove.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's why I love story so much. So I tell my story and I tell other people's story inside the music.
Right.
I think maybe the biggest chunk of me right now, the past 10 years, is that Royce that I just told you. Mm-hmm. Has become a husband and also a father for the past 8 years, and a father of two the past 4 years.
Right.
And a lot has molded that, and I'm continually to grow and to change and stuff like that. So in a nutshell, that's Royce Lovett. If I'm answering you
the best way I can. Yeah, you did. But I like the way you framed it, because a lot of people who are not from Tallahassee, who have never been from Tallahassee, or may have only spent a certain amount of time, may get that picture, because, you know, you think about Florida and everybody think beaches. And yeah, we're an hour away from the Atlantic. We're an hour away from the Gulf. But, you know, so Tallahassee, you know, and the black side and the white side is literally separated by railroad tracks.
100%.
Right. But it's interesting that you chose music, because I get it. And I don't like the fact that when we were young, we thought our choices was either, well, for us, music, sports, or drugs. And I know my friends and I, we chose sports. We know a lot of people who chose drugs, and we're in 10th grade seeing people driving their own cars that they brought, and we like, did we make the right decisions?
Yeah.
But now we know we did. But back then, you know, but that's cool. I'm real glad that you did choose music, that you ran with it, and you cultivated your talents, because you do a great job. And like I said, the way you tell stories is amazing. So
thanks, man. I appreciate that.
No problem. So you 10 years deep into music, you've done a plethora of different things, but at what point in your career or in your development as a musician did you realize that you could make a living off of this? Because you had the realization that this is what you want to do, but when did you realize that you can make a living off of it and pursue that?
I think I had a few moments where it grew a little bit. The first moment let me say this, so I was making some records and stuff like that, making some demos. I bought a little CD burner, and I burn my own CDs, and I'll write the names of the records on them, and I'll go get, like, you know, donations for that and stuff like that. And I played my first gig at this pizza spot in Sop Choppy, Florida, which is near the coast. And they paid me $50 and a pizza. It was for 4 hours, and I didn't have enough music to play those 4 hours. So this is my first introduction to even playing a show. Mm-hmm. So it ended up turning into like just a big old jam session, because I asked a bunch of friends to come and just fill up the time with me.
Right.
So we ended up, you know, just buying a bunch of pizza and chilling. But that's what you do when you're kids, because you're not thinking about nothing anyway.
Right.
But I think that moment kind of showed me that this was going to be hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm trying to make money with this, it's going to be hard. But nothing really changed.
Right.
I kind of kept doing the same thing. And I don't know if that's because of where I come from. Like, I don't come from music business. I didn't have a mentor telling me what to do or whatever. Right. What changed is when I got married. Uh-huh. And everybody was like, yo, don't do that. You're 20, don't get married. Your dreams of music gonna go down the drain. But I felt like that's what God wanted me to do. So I got married, and I believe it still would be true, because like 6 months, like 8 months into the marriage, my wife, she just basically says, yo, if you, she showed me this website. She was like, yo, if we press up some nice records, uh-huh, we can get and we buy 1,000, it's like 1,000 for a dollar. Uh-huh. And we sell these for 10, that's good margins.
Right.
And I was like, yeah. And then she said, and if you just got out there and if you just quit your job, I worked at Radio Shack at the time. Uh-huh. Like, if you quit your job and you get out there and you sell, you know, 10 a day, 20 a day, that's the same amount of money you making at Radio Shack.
Right.
You know? And so I was like, yo, that sound weird and doable and scary and, yeah, you know, all that. I kind of think that everything happens for a reason, because I was that annoying person that worked at Radio Shack. Because I was the one that had to stand in the kiosk at the mall.
Yeah.
And when y'all walked by, I was the one that had to be like, hey, yo, you want a phone? Hey, yo, yeah, I got that new iPhone. Hey, yo, right, you ready for that upgrade? And that's what I had to actually be when I was walking around selling these records. I had to be, yo, I got this new song. How you doing? Such and such. The talk right game had to be right.
Right.
And so I got to give all that credit to my wife, because she pushed me to quit my job and mm-hmm and sell records and do a photo shoot
and, right,
and turn it into a business. I think that was the first step. I think the second step was learning that, you know, everybody says like, yo, you gotta know your worth, you know, you gotta know your worth. And so I think the thing they fail to tell people is you gotta believe you're worth something.
Yes.
But you gotta know what is valuable as far as money goes.
Yeah.
If I'm an owner of a bar and you believe you worth, you know, 10K, you need to tell me why I need to pay you 10K.
Right.
Are you going to make me 20?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why are you worth that much?
Right.
And so I had to kind of figure that out. So, because for the longest time, I was like, I don't want to play no cover music. I just want to play my music. And I had to learn, nah, like, I actually have like somewhat of an advantage being a rapper playing guitar, because I can go into a bar and I can play other people's music. I can play right cover songs.
Right.
And get paid that way. And I can slide in my original music.
Right.
So people can kind of get to know it. And then I can sell CDs. So that's kind of like the second step I took.
Okay.
Things like these bars and places like that. Because a lot of people don't know it, but like when you go rent a venue and find a promoter and sell tickets, if you don't have a following, you're wasting your money.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
And so that's something I had to kind of learn the hard way. And at the same time, I learned you gotta also completely think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Turn every situation into a performance. And right, you got to perform like you're at, you know, in front of a million people, even if there's two people out there.
Right.
And those things kind of help develop that the answer to that question, as far as like, when did I start seeing? Now, I think the final answer to that question is Europe.
Okay.
Yeah. So an awesome artist, a legend, lives in town. His name's Cody Chestnut.
Yes.
Yes. He went to Europe, and I was talking to him. I said, man, I really want to do that same thing. He was like, yo, just go. And I honestly felt a little, when he told me that, I honestly felt like he wasn't telling me everything. Like he wasn't trying to help me.
Right.
That's how I felt, because I thought, you just can't go. Like, you right, just can't go to Miami and make money. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't go.
Right.
But now I get what he was saying. I mean, obviously he probably said that to me because he saw that I was developing professionally.
Right.
And so I remember the first, so we figured out how to plan our way, me and my wife, to Europe. She went to school and I secretly stayed in her dorm and took the train and the bus to different cities and played right shows. But before that turned into that, because that was the plan, I booked two shows. When I got to Europe, all the shows canceled.
Okay.
And then I was just like, yo, I gotta make money. This is hurting me. Mm-hmm. So I went into why did I come? So I went into a bar, went to a little pub an hour north of Paris in a city called Beauvais. And I had Google Translate, and I was like, hey, I need a show. I really want to play. The dude, the owner of the bar, comes out. He says, you can play tomorrow. I'm not paying you. And so I said, like whatever. Like, okay, right. I need the show.
Right.
So I give him my CD. I leave. I come back tomorrow. He has a translator there. And the translator is telling me that he is saying that he is apologizing. He says, hey, man, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have spoke to you like that. I didn't know that you are a professional musician.
Okay.
I looked at your record and it's professionally made. It's beautiful. I love your pictures. It sounds so good.
Right.
Thank you for being here. So that took me back to just like what my wife was doing in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just developing professionally.
Right.
Because you got to be ready for the moment. You just can't like be looking for a moment. You got to be ready for a moment. Yeah. So then he said, and to make up for the apology, I'm going to pay you 100 euros. And this translator is going to walk you around the room and translate for everybody. Because I invited 50 of my friends that all own bars in Paris.
Oh, man.
So it basically was a show and an audition.
Right.
And I booked 50 shows.
Wow.
And the translator ended up, his name's Gerard. He ended up being a fantastic friend and drove me to every single show.
That's what's up.
And it for awesome. And I remember one of the first shows I booked, the guy says, this is, I no longer believe that French people are rude. I just think they're straightforward.
Yeah.
He says, so how much do you charge? At that time, mind you, in the States, I was only like getting like at a bar in Tallahassee for 4 40-minute sets.
Right.
At the time, I was only getting like upwards to like $80 and some food.
Right.
So I said maybe 50 euros. And then he pulls his hand back and he says, I thought you were a professional musician. And then I said, huh? And he said, are you professional? I said, yes. He said, then I should pay you like 250.
Okay.
And so I started to realize this thing of just like knowing your worth,
right,
knowing what is, you know, realizing this thing and just feeling more confident. You know, when I got back to the States after being in Europe for 2 months, I went taking $80 no more. It was like, yeah, the price went up. And I think that's when I really knew, after coming back from Europe, that's when I really knew a direction to take.
Right.
How to make this happen.
Now that's a real cool story. Because we hear a lot of stories about people quitting their jobs to chase their dreams. I think a lot of people miss the structure within that as well. Like, because there are some people who quit their jobs to chase dreams, but they don't have things in place. And you were already developing yourself. You had somebody in your corner. Being your professional presentation really helped you, and the fact that you and your wife had the mindset to develop that, I think those are some of the things that people need to understand when they are pursuing a dream, is to make sure you have your stuff together, make sure you continuously developing yourself and getting better. Because like when you went to Europe, you were ready, you were ready, and you just needed an opportunity, and you took advantage of the opportunity. So congratulations, my brother.
Thanks, man. I agree. We have to, in every aspect, you know, financially, you know, academically, in the community, we need to start growing, you know what I mean? And developing. And that takes getting outside of your circle and learning from other people, you know?
Exactly. So you have a unique style, and I love it, because I'm a hip hop head. So I think everybody should have their own style, even though we know the whole game isn't like that. Because, you know, talking to somebody who grew up listening to Wu-Tang and 9 people, and none of them sound the same.
Yeah.
So you have a genre bending style. You mix hip hop, you mix you can sing, you can play different instruments, you got the soul part of you. Can you kind of describe your, because I know I said something, kind of describe your style and what helped develop your style of music?
I think, yeah, you kind of said it really well. Genre bending is something that I would like to tell people. Mm-hmm. I think that when I'm, I think in the main, like if somebody asked me, if I'm trying to book a gig, I normally just say hip hop soul.
Right.
Because sometimes that just paints a better picture. Uh-huh. And depending on what gig it is, I might say pop soul.
Right.
Depending on who I'm talking to. Because it's really, man, hip hop just really messed me up.
Yeah.
Because there's so much influence in hip hop that a lot of folks don't realize. And I think like one of my biggest influences, probably I have to give it up to Lauryn Hill and Jay-Z and Erykah Badu. Like, there's just so much soul in all of those people I just said. And then there's this rawness. And then Lauryn Hill just, you know, doing whatever she wants to do on a record.
Right.
Kind of proved to me that I should be able to do whatever I want to do on a record.
Exactly.
And I think that there's been moments, even with me though, to be honest with you, and then we talked about how, you know, everybody sounds the same sometimes.
Yeah.
There's been moments in my career where, you know, I've even doubted or questioned, like, man, should we make this song a little more relevant as far as the production, or should we do this, or should we do this? I think those are all good questions to ask, but at the end of the day, I think you really have to do what makes you feel good.
Right.
You know? And so that's why I love making a record. And, you know, while I'm writing the song on my guitar, it might sound like a folk soul record, but then I'll go get with a really cool producer. And now it sounds like, you know, like Up for Love. You know, right. You know, it sounds a little different. And so I just love the whole, I think the reason why I'll never change pulling these genres together is because at one of my shows, like a Royce Lovett show, I love to look at the room and see my people and white people and Asian people and older folks. And if the age limit allows, you know, sometimes we got a lot of younger kids. We have kids, like people bring their kids. And I dig that. There's something about that that's really cool. You know what I mean? How everybody could be in the same room together. No ageism for at the moment, no racism. Uh-huh. And we can connect with these stories. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if people do that. I don't know if like the hipsters look over their shoulder and see the hip hop heads.
Right.
And be like, yo, snap, I'm hanging with the hip hoppers. I don't know if they really do that, but in my mind, that's what they're doing.
Now, that's cool. But that's hip hop though. Like I've always said, hip hop was a great example of like musical alchemy, because it's all these different genres of music that come together to make hip hop. And then it's the basis for other genres as well to come out of it. So it's the perfect place to just create this melting pot of music.
Amen.
Yeah. So that's what's up. But like I said, I love that you have your style, you're comfortable in your style, and you just go with it and you don't worry about anybody else. Even though, like I said, we are all humans. Even in some of the creations that I do, whether it's my podcast or my history, sometimes I'll catch myself looking at something somebody else is doing. I have to rein myself in, but we human, so.
Yeah.
All right, so you said something in there that I felt was good, a good teaser for this next question, because you talked about how you sit back and you write your song, then you'll get with a producer that can help bring it to life. So I appreciate you for inviting me to the premiere of your new single, Skin Tone. And one of the things you were, when we were listening to you describe the creation of the song and how everything came about, you talked about how you did your writing separately, then you got with DJ L Smooth, then you all kind of put everything together. And it's a great song, so I want everybody to go to YouTube. You have to go to YouTube. First, subscribe to the Royce Lovett YouTube channel.
Yes.
Like subscribe. Like, hit that subscribe button real hard and hit that notification bell. And you will see the song Skin Tone. It's a beautiful song, a beautiful video. It's needed. It's something that's needed. So I'm going to let him explain it. But tell us more about the single Skin Tone, why you created it, and why do you feel like this song is something that's needed for today?
I've been doing a lot of, I feel like I use the word develop so much. I've been doing a lot of growing the past 5 years of my life, and probably more than I've ever done. And a lot of it had to do with my insecurities of identity. And as you pull back these layers of insecurity, you start to see the lies you might have thought or been told.
Right.
And you start to ask your question, you start to ask questions like, did someone tell me that? Or did I tell myself that?
Yeah.
And why did I tell myself that? Is it something I saw? These questions are developing. And then it's funny how things kind of work. Then a friend of mine was like, yo, I know you don't normally do this. I heard you're not on tour at the moment, but I can't teach this summer school class for the community group. I was wondering if you could just slide by. The kids would think it's so dope and you could run the class and just follow the lesson plan. It'd be easy. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And then I get there and there's a part of the lesson plan where they're drawing a picture of like Jesus talking to people.
Right.
And this little girl is kind of looking most of the day she was looking. It wasn't like a whole day. It's like a 2 hour thing. Most of the 2 hours, she wasn't really engaging. And you know me, I'm trying to be funny and tell stories or whatever. And so I asked her, what's wrong? And she doesn't answer that question, but she asked me a question. She said, so what color do I color Jesus? And then my head, I was like, I don't even know.
Right.
And I was like, well, I said, maybe Google knows, like maybe the Bible knows. Cause I'll put a pin in that thought real quick. I just want to paint this picture for folks listening. Like during that time of my life, like I said, I was like really struggling with some stuff, this identity question, trying to figure out how was I becoming a man? Like, what does this mean? Fatherhood, manhood. Being black in America, right. What do I believe about God? Do I believe God? A lot of questions.
Right.
So she asked me that question, and then I didn't want to like vomit all my problems on her. So I was like, yo, let's Google it. So I Googled it, and there's a scripture that says his skin is like bronze.
Yeah.
And so I opened the Crayola box of this like 72 color. And she looks and she pulls out bronze. Uh-huh. And when I tell you, this girl smiled the biggest I've ever seen. It made me smile.
Right.
That's when I started writing that song.
That's great.
Because skin mattered.
Yeah.
Skin mattered. And I started questioning, like, what does being colorblind mean? I started questioning, like, what does all these things mean that I've been taught and such? Fast forward as I'm writing this song, I meet a friend of mine whose close friend just committed suicide.
Right.
And I'm telling him about this song. And he tells me that he's going to let the daughter of his close friend hear it, because inside the suicide note that she left, she was talking about how she, you know, hated her skin. Uh-huh. And he remembers, you know, as a kid when she was 11, she even like sat her feet to her ankles inside of bleach, wanting to become lighter. Uh-huh. And that just really hit my heart.
Right.
And so I started talking to a lot of ladies about skin shaming and how they feel, not just in America, but in the Black community, what we do to ourselves in America, you know, the shade racism thing. And so that's how the song developed. And I talk about this little girl in the song named Jackie, who just by walking down the magazine aisle, she realizes that all the valuable people are on the magazines. Uh-huh. All the valuable people are on the TV shows I'm watching. And I don't look like none of the valuable people.
Right.
And so she has to go to this new school. And she's telling her grandma, you know, I don't want to go to this new school. I don't want ripped jeans. I don't want people seeing my legs. Like, can I start wearing weave? Like, can I start, like, I don't like my skin tone.
Right.
And the song developed from there. And the day of the music video shoot was beautiful. Because, I mean, even if the music video didn't come out, I felt accomplished because, man, we had the set. I didn't want this to feel like an amateur shoot.
Right.
You know, if it's just me, it's like, whatever. We don't got to have snacks. We ain't got to have all that such and such. Whatever, whatever. Let's just shoot this video, keep it going.
Right.
I wanted this set to feel, I wanted when those kids came in and they were met with somebody that had the contract, and this is the green room, and they had the snacks over here, and they walk through the door, and it's like lights. We had lights that we need. I'm shit, bro. We brought lights we need. We brought boxes we need, and TV screens to show like the images that we need, just so when they walked in, they felt like, yo, I'm at a video shoot. Like, this is, I'm at Hollywood. And to see how those kids responded, man.
Listen, that's good.
It was awesome. And I think it developed, and you can see it on the music video.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate you bringing it up. I'm and coming to the you know, reveal of it. I'm really happy about it. Working on a few things to kind of further that project, because I didn't realize how strong it was. So now it's kind of become a project. So we're kind of like developing that a little bit. But yeah, man, that's the song Skin Tone. So it has a lot of my story in it, a lot of other people's stories in it. And it's for anybody and everybody.
69,000 views and counting so far on YouTube in 2 weeks. Look, I'm gonna say this one more time. Y'all go to YouTube, Royce Love It. You see the name on the screen. Subscribe. Listen, this video is important. This song is important. As you listen to the story that he told about what brought the song about, how the song began how it came about, why he wrote the song. But we all understand the importance of us loving ourselves as Black people in America. Whatever your skin tone, because I know a lot of people who are light skinned may think that dark skinned people have it easy, or dark skinned may think light skinned people have it easy. But we all as Black people, we have those issues, those complexes, because we live in America, which is a racist place. But whenever we get art such as what Royce produced in Skin Tone, you make sure you sit the whole family down. This is something that's for the whole family. Y'all sit down and y'all groove to it, and you enjoy it, and love your melanin, no matter what skin tone you is, no matter where you are on the radius.
Completely.
Yes. 100%.
And love your brothers and your sisters too. Yes. And if they ain't loving theirs, give them enough love.
Right.
Like, they'll start loving theirs. Like, 100%, man. There's something something happens. I mean, like Tupac said it best, like we got to change the way we eat.
Yes.
Change the way we speak, that change the way we treat each other. And to me, what he was saying was, well, he said it in a different order, but body, mind, and soul.
Right, right.
We got to the whole thing has to change. And I promise you guys, when you're listening, if you don't got to change all at the same time, just try changing one and the rest gonna follow. You know what I'm saying? So when you bring value to yourself, when you understand that you are valuable, not held to, you know, a standard of what your bank account looking like, or what kind of job you got, but just the fact that you are beautiful and created, you want to learn, you want to read,
you want to
know the things you didn't know, you want to eat better, you want to treat your body better, you want your skin to move how it's supposed to move,
right?
You want to treat your brother the same because you want to see all of them, and that's what waking up is.
Right. Yeah. You know and also, like, as a musician, just a quick question: how important do you think it is for especially Black musicians to have positive messages for their listeners within their artwork?
Man, this answer is going to be as friendly as possible. Because to be honest with you, I do understand that people have food and they have liquor. And liquor is not always bad, but too much liquor will kill you.
Good. Right. I like that. I like that balance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so I'd rather my music be food. Mm-hmm. I believe that if we were all, you know, moving mind, body, and soul, the rest of the world would rather their music to be food.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You could compare this to redlining. You could compare this to the war on drugs. You could compare this to a lot of places. And when artists are caught between starving and feeding their families, and the option of liquor says, I'm going to make you money.
Right.
No matter what it's going to do to anybody.
Right.
I believe there's some trauma there.
Right.
And I'm not taking away genuineness. I'm not taking away skill. I'm not taking away delivery. I'm not taking away the creative touch to trauma.
Right.
But I think that in our heart of hearts, you know what I'm saying? You know, not everybody want to be riding around selling drugs in their head in the morning.
Right.
That's just a funny way to put it. And, you know, I'm not knocking none of my homies, not knocking nobody for, you know, getting out there and you know, paying your mortgage. I do think at some point we got to be real with it. Like, I felt so blessed. I'm trying to remember the name of the song. I felt so blessed when I was listening to the radio, and that's not something I do often. When I heard, what's the name of that song? The Bigger Picture by Little Baby.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I felt very blessed, and I bought it immediately. I bought it on all the platforms.
Yeah. Good.
You know what I mean? So I think we all have to do something to speak into the culture and not always take from the culture.
Right. But now I love the way you answered that, because I think I've said this in the conversation with my friends. I think hip hop is one of the art forms that is criticized the most, and it's not giving the same room to be creative or for the positivity and the negativity to exist, because it's an art form. It's an art form that comes from people who may come from certain environments and certain things, and you never know what's going on. So we do have to understand that you will have music that may not always be the best for us, but we have to have balance. And as long as we have balance, then we can look at some things. But I do, spoken like a true artist.
Yo, 100%. Like I forget who said it, but they said it at some point, illustrations are illustrations.
Yeah.
But at some point, illustrations, depending on marketing and all this other stuff that has to do with capitalism. I'm not saying capitalism is inherently evil. I'm just saying at some point when you're just trying to make money, illustrations can be confused or turn into aspirations.
You're right.
And I'm illustrating that I sold drugs and I needed to get out of the game and all these gangster rap. I'm illustrating the racism that's pulled over, you know, NWA. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're illustrating these things. But then at some point, like you said, the criticism and the forces that move things around on the internet can turn something into a desire or something like that.
Right. You know what I mean? Right.
And that shouldn't be the case. And so that's why, you know, when I go to, you know, detention centers or, you know, jails, orphanages or whatever, you know, I'm talking to some of the younger kids, I like to kind of debunk some of those things where, yeah, you know, by just letting them know how the industry works. And it's crazy. Like when you find out that the reason why your favorite, you know, shoe was a Jordan is because as marketing, and you understand yeah, the marketing yeah, that happens inside the music. I get paid to wear these and I get paid to talk about these and such right, and such and such. And then sometimes you feel a little like, well, man.
Exactly.
You know, and the truth will set you free. You feel me?
Yep. Yep. Nah, that's real though. That's real. I'm glad you give it to them like that, because I think our youth need a more realistic look of the world rather than people trying to sugarcoat the world. So
yeah.
So you are a signed artist now, correct?
I am. It's a funny way to say it. So I have a distribution deal at the moment.
Okay, good.
But I have a publishing deal as well. So I was a signed artist for about 4 years with Motown, Capitol Records, Capitol CMG. And then it was a really nice break. They didn't come for me.
Right.
But I just felt like I needed something else. And so we decided to part ways. And most recently with the new mixtape, I'm working with Reflection Music Group, who has ties to, like, you know, other labels or whatever. But anyway, when you start thinking about distribution and all that kind of stuff, sometimes the wording get a little tricky. Yeah, so technically, I'm not a signed artist, but I'm a signed artist.
No, but you answered it perfectly. I was like, you're in my head. So you answered it perfectly, because want to kind of get you to talk about the differences between being an independent artist or being a signed artist and the varieties of it, because just for the people who may be watching, who may have aspirations of being a part of the music industry, just like, what's the difference? What are some of your experiences as independent versus signed artist?
Okay, well, there is probably some stuff that, you know, I'm still learning. So I won't say everything, but from my experience, all right. So just because you're an artist, I wouldn't call everybody an independent artist.
Uh-huh.
I would call them an aspiring artist.
Okay.
A developing artist.
Okay.
An emerging artist.
Uh-huh.
And then an independent artist. I think independent, and I think independent means a lot more than we say it means.
Right.
It means that you can move independently, financially,
right,
with your tours, with your merch, with your marketing, you know what I mean? Like, and a lot of times that can come from distribution deals, that can come from partnerships, that can come from private investment and stuff like that. An emerging artist, I would say, is someone who's like on the cusp of being signed, or one that is signed and that is like near breaking, right, near like that point. The other artists, I mean, those names can kind of speak for themselves. But I would say, I think one of the biggest differences from my experience from going from, you know, a developing artist to a signed artist, uh-huh, was a culture shock a little bit, because I was so used to doing everything myself.
Right.
Being the artist, being the promoter, being the marketer, being the developer, being the all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt good to hear I could take off these hats and just be an artist, but that was hard to get used to.
Right.
Because a lot of times in history, in the industry, things are hurry up, stop, wait, hurry up, wait, hurry up, wait. Yeah. And so that was hard for me to get used to. That actually, the first year of my signing, it brought me a lot of anxiety, and uh-huh, and you know, I lost weight. It wasn't that pretty of a year in my head, because I thought you get signed and you blow up.
That's what we all think.
Yeah. And so no, it's a whole nother thing. You got signed, but we're still developing. We're looking for the story. We're looking for the right song. We're looking for the right partnerships. And right. So that year I was learning a whole bunch. I actually didn't know I was learning, mm-hmm, until I realized it. I just thought y'all were just messing with me. Now, I mean, you didn't ask me about publishing. There's a whole other idea to that, which is really confusing sometimes.
Right.
But I also signed a publishing deal as a writer. And so sometimes as an artist, sometimes artists don't get signed as writers. They're just artists. They're
right.
Just the body of the music, and there's other writers for you.
Right.
So I think, any other ways I can answer this question? I think there are some difficult points and a lot of successes as well, as far as like being able to work with a bigger budget, so you could work with producers that, because there's a whole different class of producer, not as far as like who can do the best thing,
right,
but as far as like who can pull you onto the record.
Right. Right.
I think a lot of producers I worked with before getting signed, the record just sounded like them.
Right.
And I was on it. But then you're able to kind of work with some guys that kind of understand, you know, because they worked with other people for so long, kind of understand the flow and the progression of how things should work, which also was a struggle for me, because, you know, coming from a developing artist, when we made a record, we went with it.
Right.
In the sign world, you might have 4 or 5 demos and they all sound different.
Right.
And I would fall in love with the first demo, and I'd be like, nah, this is the one. And they'd be like, nah, man, like, I think we need to move in this direction. You know what I mean? No, why are we going to remake it? And just understanding like how big a record could get, how it could sound. And so now I love playing with the art form. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
I think there are some moments where I also realized that I could have been doing a little more.
Okay.
Because there was a point in my career where I took off all the hats and I was just the artist and I felt great. But there was like a span of maybe like 6 months to a year where I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Because I figured other people were handling stuff. And then I realized that some people are people and they drop the ball on certain things. And I'm thinking this is coming through and that's coming through, and it didn't come through. So I think that as, I'm not sure who I'm talking to, but if you are in transitions or inspiring to, or a signed artist right now and you're having a hard time, I would say be a sponge. and learn, and don't stop working.
Right.
Don't stop working, because there's always something you could be doing, because getting signed and blowing up is not the thing. Getting signed and putting in work.
That's
what it is. And then when you put in that work, keep developing, keep growing, keep moving over. I probably, if we go back, you know, this past like 50 minutes or so, I probably said develop. Like,
it's all good, but it's you're emphasizing it. Development is very look. I say the same thing with podcasting. I am very particular about podcasting, and it's developed over time. We had somebody who sat us down and told us, hey, you know, what y'all doing is cute, but it's not good. So we're going to take it. I'd have a problem with that, because he showed us how to do it better. So development is real. You can't just think you're just going to just do it because you want to do it. There's a certain structure. There are certain things you need to learn to be able to produce the content to be successful with it.
Yes.
So, you say development as many times as you need. So you were able to grow as an artist, and the whole city was behind you when we learned that you were going to be a contestant on The Voice.
Yeah.
You went on The Voice and you did your thing. So, like, how did that whole experience happen? Like, how did you get to become a contestant on The Voice, and how did it feel to make good on that opportunity?
Man, the experience was fantastic. I learned a lot about myself.
Yeah.
I think I've been doing that the past 5 years, really learning a lot about myself, man, and soaking it up, bro. To give a story, I had just kind of came off this, like, kind of like very, I don't want to use the word depressing, because I wasn't depressed, but it was just a low moment for me,
right?
Because I thought one of these records that I wrote named Ballad was going to put me somewhere financially that I've never been before,
right?
And that thing didn't happen, and that thing also, you know, took me low as a husband, because I wanted to do something and I couldn't do it. Uh-huh. And then he actually ended up moving, you know, from where we were,
right,
you know, to save money and to figure things out. And I was in a low place, but during that low place, learning a lot of things. It's funny because it's intertwined. I wrote down two goals at the end of that year, in 2017. I wrote down one goal was to buy a house with a yard so the kids could play, because mm-hmm. we never owned anything, and to do a TED Talk.
Yeah.
So I made no efforts to contact TED. I didn't write a TED Talk. I didn't do anything. Uh-huh. To walk down the road of doing a TED Talk. But like 2 months later, I got a call from this lady who heard me play in Nashville and heard one of my songs called T-Shirt Man and asked me to come do a TED Talk. And my mouth just fell to the floor. So fast forward on the airplane flight after the TED Talk on Cloud 9. that's funny, airplane flight. Cloud 9. my wife texts me and says, hey, you got an email from some people from The Voice. They want you to like come audition. And I was like, that's a scam. They don't do that.
Yeah.
and she was like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a scam. So I was like, whatever, let's just see what it was. And it actually wasn't. It was talent scouts. And I was like, yo, I didn't know that you guys actually, you know, go look for people.
Right.
And at the time, I doubted it. I was like, nah, babe, I don't think we should do this, because, and these are all my insecurities. I was like, man, my fans are going to think, oh, he got dropped from his label, and now he don't know what to do, and he not rapping no more. Now he's singing. And I was like, and then if I lose, then people might think I'm not as talented as I think I am. You know, all these things in my head. And my wife, again, she was just she literally was just like, boy, if you get on one episode, if you just get on one episode, that's the goal. You know what I'm saying? That just opens the door to so many other things. So reluctantly, you know, I did it and I got on. And the whole time I was being blessed and encouraged and feeling grateful about everything. I learned a lot. I know a lot of people, when they ask me about The Voice, you know, a lot of people want to know, like, you know, about the stars I met and the wardrobe and the tools and all that. All those things were cool. Like, I learned some things. I learned, you know, three or four things, like, as far as wardrobe and how to move on camera, because moving on camera is different than moving on live performances. Uh-huh. But all those things spoke to me a little differently about confidence, about how I saw myself and how other people might see me, and how I need to speak through this camera so other people can be touched by it. You feel me? And but bigger than that, the experience I took back was, I have everything in the world to be grateful for. And it's a long story too. If I went down the road of like every moment that I started to realize, I think one of the most amazing moments, and I'll try to tell this really quick, that happened during The Voice is, my family came up for the day of the audition, and it was a long day. And something that the judges, not the judges, but something the staff kept saying the whole while I was there, and we were there for like weeks at a time, is like, yo, remember, don't get in your head, don't get in your head, don't get in your head. And it's funny because to me, I was like, man, y'all need to tell them that. Like, what's going on with it? Like, what I do, this is what I do.
Right.
Like, Royce don't get in his head. But lo and behold, bro, I got in my head.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, my family came up and my name got called, and I went to the tunnel and had my guitar on, and I was waiting for, you know, the door to open. And it hit me, and I was like forgetting the words to the song.
Yeah.
I was like, oh snap, what is going on? Like, Royce, it's not you. What's going on? So I said to myself, you, Royce, you need to like remember this moment or something.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I've ever really said it to myself. And I've never done that before. So in my head, I was like, well, how do you remember a moment?
Uh-huh.
How do you do that? So all I was like, was maybe I'll just use my senses.
Right.
So I touched the wall to feel how cold it was.
Okay.
And then I kind of moved on the floor a little bit to feel like if it was hard or like it had some give to it.
Right.
And then I counted the lights above my head, and then I counted the rows of chairs. And after I did that, this like peace came upon me.
That's cool.
And I'll never forget that moment. But at the same time, that's when all these things I missed came back.
Yeah.
Like, my wife was looking so good, and I ain't recognize it until that moment.
Yeah.
And my kids had fresh haircuts and new clothes on. And I was like, man, I ain't seen them in like 3 weeks. And I was just so in my head that I didn't even tell my wife. I didn't even tell her she looked good. I didn't even tell my mom came. I didn't even like give my mom like a proper hug, you know what I mean?
Right.
And those things kind of came back during that moment. And then I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go out here and kill it. I'm just do what I always do and have fun. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
And every time, like, I don't know if when people watch the video, you'll see I keep kind of looking at the family, because I was just like, man, I can't believe I missed seeing them for a few hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were here with me, but I was so in my head.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that the experience of The Voice did more for me, like mentally and spiritually, than almost anything. Just being so grateful for my wife and my kids and the life that I have, and the success that I have, you know, learning not to equate my, because a long time inside the music industry when I was, for a long time when I was signed, I was never content when I was home because I was always, I always thought I needed to get an award. I needed to have the money that looked like this and the tour needed to be longer. And so I just been learning so much and still, and God's still like blessing and, you know, still growing and still achieving and stuff like that. So to answer your question about the voice and then the city, like having my back, I remember sometimes I used to ride around town and somebody would be like, yo, man, Tallahassee Hero. And I'll be like, man, Tallahassee don't love me.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of really nice, actually, like during the voice, like Tallahassee was like, yo, we got your back, son. And I was like, it could have been the lights talking, but I was like, you know, regardless if it was, you know, whatever it is, I appreciate it because I do love my city.
Yeah. Now, trust me, man, like as a creator and talking to many other people who are creators and just who produce things from Tallahassee, we feel like that. We feel like that. I guess we need to change the way we need to start showing people love a lot more before the big things. And I guess that's one of the things they need to change. But there are a lot of people who do feel like, I've even feel like that a lot of times, that, man, they don't know who I am. I don't care about what I'm in here doing all this work. Nobody cares. But I'm glad you said that, because even reminding me that, get out of your head.
Yeah.
But that was beautiful how you explained that. Because you dropping a lot of jewels in this interview. Like, I don't know if you mean it to do it like this, but you're dropping a lot of jewels. But just that whole fact of enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
You're centering yourself, bringing yourself back into the moment where you can be present and enjoy everything that goes on, but still do your performance, but getting out of your head. So that's one thing I'm definitely taking away from this as a creator, is just get out of my own head.
100%, bro.
Yeah. Now you're doing your thing, man. You're dropping a lot of information to a lot of people, because a lot of people are going to learn from this. We both know there are a lot of young black men who want to be in the music industry, and you're helping them learn a lot of things that they otherwise may not have been able to have access to that information. So,
thanks, man.
No problem. So, 10 years in the music game. Created your own lane. What do you feel is one of the greatest lessons that you've learned as an artist? And how do you feel that lesson has shaped you moving forward?
I think as of today, because it could change. The greatest lesson I've learned as an artist is to keep growing.
Okay.
And I think we've talked about that a few times.
Uh-huh.
But there's something, you just can't keep growing. It just don't happen.
Right.
You gotta be, I believe a self-aware person is a loving person.
Uh-huh.
So you gotta love to be able to be self-aware.
Right.
A self-aware person asks questions. A self-aware person doubts. A self-aware person fears, because they're self-aware.
Uh-huh.
You gotta allow yourself to do those things. But the difference between fearing alone or doubting alone is working through that, because you're also loving.
Right.
And so I believe a self-aware person is a grateful person, because you can't be grateful if you haven't had a struggle. You can't be grateful if you haven't had a fear. You can't be grateful if you haven't had a doubt. You can't be grateful if you're not loving. And so I think all these things kind of pile up on each other. And I think a grateful person grows.
Yes.
You know, when I was trying to get my mother-in-law to take me in as a son, I couldn't date my wife until she turned 18. Uh-huh. So, you know, I would come over and I would like be talking, have dinner, wash dishes. But I knew a little bit about landscaping from my uncles. So I want to ask my uncle if he'll hook me up with some palm trees. She was just telling me that she liked these sable palms and, you know, king palms and just different palms. So he was like, yeah, I got some palms in the back. You can have them for like 20. I think it was like 20 something bucks, whatever. It was a long time ago. So I take this to my future mother-in-law's house and I plant them on each side of the house. Uh-huh. And to this day, one of them is maybe, I forget the name of the palm. It's the one that looks like a hand and it's more of a bush.
Right.
One of them is about 6 feet around and about 6 to 8 feet tall. No, it has to be like 8 to 9 feet tall. And then round. The other one is still the same size when I planted it. And when I look at it, when I come there, what it kind of tells me is one had the things it needed to grow.
Yeah.
And one didn't die. It just never grew.
Right. It just existed.
And that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you can even see like trees sometimes when they grow out crazy, like curvy, is because, you know, I'm trying to get in the camera, is because they might have like a canopy over them. Uh-huh. And they will kind of move out so they can get some sun.
Right.
So they can grow. What I'm trying to say is that I think that, you know, growth is learning to always grow and all that that entails. Uh-huh. Is probably the greatest lesson that I've learned. It's helped me be a better writer, a better artist in my career. It has also helped me be a better friend, which is more important than this artist thing, a better husband, a better son, a better father. Right. And the better I get at that, I feel like it makes me a better writer.
Right.
And good songs do well. So that's the goal. That's my goal.
That's what's up. Now, all right. So I want to ask, this is our final question. I want to ask you this one. We ask all of our guests this question. And one of the reasons is we get a lot of different answers. And so sometimes when we ask it, people like, that's a heavy question, but we want to ask it. If you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, like you had that clout of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
That is a heavy question because this could go for another like 3 hours and I would need to go get some more wine. And we would need to lay this plan out. Right. You feel me?
Right.
You feel me? Vote for Royce 28. let me see. Ooh. To simplify this train of thought, I'm gonna think out loud.
Okay. That's fine.
And I might not even answer the question.
That's fine.
Just going off what's on top of my head right now, not trying to get too deep. Like Booker T. Washington was like, yo, we need to chill on all the like policies and focus on building wealth
right
by trades and owning and working. Wilson was like, we need to do both.
Right.
But it's hard to do both when you're only thinking about making money. I think I found my value as being a Black man when I re-educated myself in history.
Right.
Knowing that people that looked like me had a hand in science.
Yes.
In mathematics, in travel, in exploration, engineering, in everything. Arts, culture, that pushed me to another place.
Right.
I wonder what would be different if academia taught a different curriculum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think if I was the almighty ruler, I think I would start by doing something in academia.
Right.
Yeah, that's my answer.
That's cool.
I don't know what that something is, but that's right. My answer.
Now, that's the beauty of the question, because we always get we've been asking that question over 5 years and we always get different answers. And that's the beauty of it, because we see the vastness of our thinking, the vastness of our experiences, and how different people would attack different issues, even the same issue. So, yeah. But it also gives us a better understanding of working together. If we work together and we can put all these different pieces together, we can make a hell of a change within our community. So,
100%.
Yes. Sir, so
that's going to be the next question I ask when I get somebody over here for a few hours.
Right, good.
Post some coffee and ask that question.
Right, have a seat. So, your website is roycelovett.com.
Yes.
Other than your website, what are other places that people can contact you, be able to follow you, be able to support you?
Any of the social media platforms I'm on at Royce Lovett, and I do comment back. I do DM back. I don't always follow back depending on what you're posting.
Yeah, right.
but yes, I will follow back, because I know most folks, they'd be like, yo, follow back. But the only other thing I would say in support is that I know we talk a lot about streaming music, but I feel like if you really, really, really want to support an artist, help change the algorithm.
Yes.
So when you follow, hit the notification button and comment when you see something. Don't just double tap.
Right. You know,
comment, share. That helps change the algorithm so more people can hear the music. And then if you can, buy and stream.
Yes.
Because that really works. It takes about 1,500 streams for some artists to see around $1. If you buy and stream, that's beautiful, because we'll get a little bit more money as far as support goes with the purchase. And when you stream, those numbers change our algorithm.
Right.
So it all kind of has to work together. I know sometimes the system seems a little evil, but if you want to support Royce Lovett,
that's what you
can help change my algorithm.
There you go. And I'm gonna say it again. YouTube, go to YouTube, subscribe. Like you said, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, like, comment, share. It really changes the algorithm. It really does, and more people can view. And like I said, his video Skin Tone has 69,000 and counting views. Let's get the brother to a couple million. Let's quit playing. Because this video is an incredible video. It's an incredible work of art, and we need to get behind it as if Marvin Gaye put it out or something like that. So let's get this brother over 1 million views, man. Let's do it.
100. Thanks, guys.
Oh, man. Thank you for being the person that you are, for being the artist that you are, being the activist that you are. Our city is definitely better off because of you. You are an asset in the community, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to make sure I share my platform with you. So in the time moving forward, you holler at me. You got my number. Let's just text. We can make things happen. I'll gladly be a part of helping get information out. You need an interview. You need a platform to get some promotions and things out. Just let me know. We're here because my friend Patrick and I, we built this for us, by us, to make sure that we're connecting the people in our community like yourself to our community members. So we are here.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much.
No problem. But and thank you. And I ain't gonna hold you up no more. I know you got to get back to the family and things, but we're definitely gonna talk soon, man, and I appreciate you.
Dope. Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. So I'll see you later.
Peace.